for young people to aspire to work in environmental issues and in sustainability and in being leaders, or even being that young person in a company that can lead the ESG profile and completely transform the entire company because they believe in the environment. And young people are the ones who see most urgency because they are the ones shouldering the burden of climate change on their health, their future, as well as their basic access to education, healthcare services, and so on.
Hello and welcome to the Women of the Future podcast, a podcast made in collaboration with the Women of the Future programme, a platform built to unlock a culture of kindness and collaboration among leaders, as well as support and celebrate the successes of women. I'm Kim Rowell and I won the media category at their awards in 2018 in recognition of my continued work as a commissioner, producer and children's author, particularly within the mental health remit. I'll be talking to my guests on this podcast about their careers, who or what gave them their first big break, their successes, failures and inspirations along the way, and how they came to be a part of the Women of the Future network. Dr. Omnia El Omrani is a Climate and Health Junior Policy Fellow at Imperial College London. She was the first official youth envoy for the President of COP27 and the Egyptian Minister of Foreign Affairs, and then was appointed as Health Envoy for the 28th UN Climate Conference, COP28. A medical doctor with multiple roles as a commissioner at the Lancet Commissions on Sustainable Healthcare, Prevention of Viral Spillover and Post-COVID Population Health, Omnia also holds positions as a regional associate for MENA at Prospera and serves as a member of the TED Countdown Vision Council and the Collective Minds Council. Omnia has attended the last five UN climate change conferences in Katowice, Madrid, Glasgow, Sharm el-Sheikh and Dubai, representing more than 1.3 million medical students worldwide in the International Federation of Medical Students Association, and in Egypt representing youth globally. Omnia was selected as one of the 2023 Women of the Future 50 Rising Stars in ESG.
So I come from Cairo, Egypt, and I'm a single child. So I had the opportunity to grow very closely with my family, both my mom and dad. And my mom was staying at home to take care of me. And we were very close to each other. We had a beautiful friendship growing up. And my dad was a businessman. He used to travel all the time. It was very inspiring to see how he was also serving in several multilateral organizations and doing a lot of conferences and events around global issues, which I think what started my passion towards working beyond the scope of being in Egypt, but also looking at the global perspective and looking at communities and how to help them. But of course, as every parent, they were very keen for me to become a doctor. And I was very nerdy. So I used to love studying and reading. I also used to love doing a lot of art and piano, but I was still a geek at heart. So when I finished school, I was very bright in biology and passionate about it. So I started my medical degree in Cairo as well.
Wow, that's it sounds like a really lovely upbringing, actually. I wanted to ask, you talked about being a nerd and, you know, in academia, but when was the seed of ESG planted in your mind? Because it seems like quite a current term to me, and I'm sure probably to most of the people listening. But was there always kind of an underlying interest in environment, social, governance type subjects? Or was that something that came a bit later?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I have a very different answer. Because environmental issues and climate change were not something in my upbringing that I was close to. And I only started realizing its importance when I started medical school. And during my third year, I was selected to do an emergency medicine training in Hialeah Hospital in Miami, Florida. And during my second week, and there was Hurricane Irma. So it was the first time for me to see a climate-related disaster and the impacts of climate change directly on the health of the patients I was working with So I realized that seeing the direct injuries many people were presenting with because of the hurricane debris, but also the delayed access to healthcare services that they needed because of the power outages and the road blockages, the stress, the anxiety many people felt, including myself, being in a hurricane that was back then the highest to hit the US. And I recognize that as a physician, it is my responsibility not only to protect the health of people, but also the health of the environment which we depend on. So I went back to Egypt, very motivated and curious. And I was also expecting that I would learn more about climate change in my public health curriculum that I was expected to start. But I was surprised that there was no mention of environmental health, of climate change, or anything in my curriculum, which is meant to prepare me for being a physician that understands my responsibility towards health and the health of the planet. So this motivated me to join a medical student organization that was across 130 countries, and it represented over 1.3 million medical students. And in this organization, they had a specific program that focused on climate change and health. So I decided to learn more, to do a lot of workshops and trainings as a trainee and then as a trainer, educating medical students around the world on this specific intersection. And because of that, I actually applied to be part of this medical student delegation of 10 students, the one that went to the UN Climate Change Conference in 2018, which was COP24 in Poland.
You've done so much already, it's quite remarkable. But I wanted to understand more about your trajectory with COP and how that first came about, because you were the first official youth envoy for the president of COP27 and the Egyptian Minister of Foreign Affairs. But like you were saying there, you've represented, or you've attended at least, the last five UN climate change conferences. So was COP24 your first foray into that world, or how did it all come about? I mean, you've already kind of given us a lead up on the influences that led you in that direction, but you kept coming back, didn't you? So it'd be great to understand that journey as well.
Yeah, absolutely. COP24 was my first COP, and I spent 3 weeks in Poland, completely immersed in the climate space, both working with young climate activists who are non from the health sector and working with the physicians, the public health experts, the nurses, and the health community that was always part of COP and the climate change conference, which motivated me in ways that I cannot explain around this critical nexus. Because I felt that together with the young people and the health community, there's a great opportunity to center health and justice at the heart of the climate negotiations, to bring urgency, but also to bring in the people's perspective on the impacts of these discussions when they are slow to act and at the costs it has on health. And being a physician gave me the opportunity, the platform to say that and to talk about that. So when I went back to Egypt, I wanted to work more because I was mainly focusing on climate change from a research and an education perspective. Together with my organization, we did the first ever global survey across 112 countries to see whether climate change was mentioned in the curriculum of medical students or not. And we realized out of 2,817 schools, less than 12% of them had a mention of climate change, which meant that doctors are not prepared to face the climate crisis, even though they are the first line responders to the impacts of climate on health, and not just climate related disasters, but also the rise in infectious diseases, heat stress, mental health emergencies, malnutrition, and so on. But I wanted to translate that research and advocacy work that we do at the local level in Egypt and regionally into the global space. So I decided to apply for being the representative of my medical student organization to the UN and to the World Health Organization Climate Department. And this position was, the elections took place in Taiwan. So I did that in 2019 to over 1,000 medical students. And I was elected and appointed to represent them. And then I was the head of the delegation of students going to COP25 in Madrid, which was also another amazing experience that I got to learn how to work with multilateral organizations, to work with ministers and policymakers, and represent the voices of the students of our organization back to them. And then afterwards, I was then almost finishing my medical studies. And I had two options, which was to continue doing my medical work and starting my residency, which will not give me any time to work on climate change, or to pursue a public health degree and to do that. But I was a bit disappointed because when I wanted to do a public health degree in my university, they said climate change is not something they see as a priority. There are other important issues and more prevalent in Egypt, such as infectious diseases, occupational health, and so on, but not climate change. So I decided to, I was also passionate on surgery. So I said, well, I would do a residency in surgery for a couple of years until I finish my specialization, and then I can always go back to climate change. So I did plastic and reconstructive surgery for almost 2 years. I wasn't as passionate, but I was still following up on what was happening in the climate space. And then Nigel Topping came to Egypt and wanted to meet the Egyptian young climate experts. I was invited to join his roundtable. And then his team, the high-level champion team, invited me to COP26 in Glasgow. I went there for 3 days to speak about my work on health education and climate and health. And then when I went back, Egypt was selected to host COP27. And the government decided for the first time to appoint a youth envoy to have a young person in the presidency team to represent and to lead the youth program and to ensure that young people have opportunities to be part of the process in the most meaningful way possible. And I was then invited by the presidency to participate in the application process for the youth envoy. And a few months later, I was appointed and I was given the time to take time off from my residency program to do the youth envoy position full term, full time.
You're so remarkable. I don't know how you find the time. You're making me feel tired just listening to all of the things that you've achieved. But you've spoken there about people like Nigel Topping and his influence on where you've ended up in your career and your life. We talk a lot about mentors, and like I'm guessing Nigel is that kind of person for you, but has there been any other person or maybe even a moment that you would say helped reaffirm that what you were doing was the right thing? And like you said, you took some time to invest more in the surgery side, but still with the climate change going on in the background and managing your time in that way. Has there been any guiding light for you that is a reassurance that it'll all be okay? Or I don't know, maybe you don't have that type of person. It would be great to know.
Yeah, I think I had so many, and I cannot speak about how important, helpful it was to me in every way. And it started with being at COP24. I met two amazing doctors. One was an emergency doc from Canada. Her name is Courtney Howard, and another public health physician from the US. Her name is Jenny Miller, and they were both leading the Global Climate and Health Alliance. So as a fifth-year medical student, then I was so inspired to see their journey and their dedication to work both as physicians, but to also work on climate change and to bring their voices in a space that wasn't yet realizing the importance and relevance of talking about health and having health practitioners in a climate diplomacy space. So they were so helpful throughout the years and until now. Because very recently, after my position as the youth envoy concluded, I decided to work full time on climate and health. And I moved to London to join Imperial College as a policy fellow, focusing on climate and mental health. And at the same time, I was working with the COP28 presidency as the health envoy this year. And recently, I was invited to deliver a talk at Oxford University on the work that we did on COP27 and youth engagement and health. And my mentor, who was Courtney, was actually studying in Oxford, and she came to my talk. This was
Oh,
6 years after we first met.
how lovely.
And she has been so incredible until now in guiding me in all the decisions I want to make. I also had mentors in every workplace I was in. Here at Imperial, our director of the Institute of Global Health Innovation, Professor David Nabarro, is also one of the most amazing mentors I've had. Moving from being a physician into the public health and policy space is challenging because I personally struggled with Working with patients directly has the impact that you see, but at the same time, working on policy, there's more of a long-term impact. And sometimes there's the challenge of wanting to do both, but finding the time, finding the prioritization, making the right choices. And he has helped me so much in making that decision and feeling confident in the decisions that I'm taking. I think one important mentor is my mother, who helped me in during very difficult times in making choices. And when many people would say no to the choices that you want to make, to the passion that you see yourself doing your whole life, my mom was there to make me believe in myself, in how I see my future, and how I want to help people in the way that I see best. So, yeah. And of course, there are many others, but I will keep it at that.
And I'm talking with you today because you were selected as one of the 2023 Women of the Future 50 Rising Stars in ESG. So huge congratulations for that as well. It's such a truly well-deserved recognition. But across all the work that you've done, all the things that you've been talking about, can there be any one thing in particular that stands out for you or that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, I think one thing I'm very proud of is doing the youth envoy position for the first time was incredibly exciting, but also super challenging because I had no handover and I had an amazing advisor who was also one of my mentors in the presidency team and an incredible negotiator, but at the same time working with young people and fulfilling their expectations, doing the most for their participation, not to be tokenistic, but to be meaningful for them, to be seen as experts and not as young panelists, or just to have that in a way that would make this position something that lasts and not a one-off thing. And I was very proud that I had an incredible team of Egyptian young experts, and together we developed an entire program for the year working on how to build the capacity of young people coming to COP. We had over 10,000 young people join Egypt, but also creating a forum where we brought in the negotiators, ministers, and the chair of country groups together with the young people for the first time, and not in panels, but in dialogues and roundtable discussions, where young people were seen as partners to the discussion and proposing their policy recommendations, and just doing all the amazing ideas that my team had, and then seeing them now becoming the first ever cohort of Egyptian climate negotiators. And they went to COP28 in Dubai in the UAE. And they're also establishing the first ever National Egyptian Climate Committee in the Ministry of Youth. So it has been incredibly proud moment for me to see them do this incredible work. And also seeing the youth envoy position being done again in the UAE. And now it is permanently institutionalized. So every presidency for COP is mandated to have a youth envoy. And there's an office that is being established now within the UN to support this champion for all the years to come.
Yeah, it's an awareness piece, isn't it? And what you're talking about is like a legacy and something that's invested in and is sustainable and is something that just continues. And it's not like you were referencing a tokenistic gesture to make something look good or appear as it should be. But how important do you think, I mean, you received the Rising Star ESG Award. How important do you think that recognition like that is? Do you think there is a really important role to play in awareness and just making sure that it keeps recurring and being highlighted as a really, really important element of society? Because like you were saying, when you were looking for a degree, there wasn't anything that specialised specifically in climate change in that moment. So do you think this kind of reinforcing of a message is really important when it comes to ESG in particular?
Yeah, I think this award has three different importances for me. The first one is the sense of community, getting to meet all the amazing women who are leaders in ESG. And ESG is a very interesting and diverse term and can apply to all different sectors. Each one of us would do it differently, whether it's in the health sector, in the business sector, in the philanthropic sector, and so on. But having the sense of community where we can come together and learn from each other in a way that was never done before is very important for me beyond building awareness. And I think the climate space is very much dominated by men more than women. So having a specific stream that recognizes women for their achievements within the ESG field, and especially in the corporate world, is also very important because there are many, even many research that I've done that looked into the gender representation in climate leadership, which is very much missing. Every COP, yes, more women leaders are present in the climate conference, but not equally. There is a gender action plan, but not yet funded in the way that it should. And this transcends from the global up to the local level, to the local communities, to the women who are disproportionately affected, and yet they are not in a position to influence changes in or the decisions that would address climate change and its impact. So this is another important piece. And I think the last thing is for young people to see these incredible women and to see what they were able to do and the possibility of it being done, because there is a huge influence by corporates away from ESG. And also seeing it as a very complicated and not as attractive as being a physician or being an engineer or being these very siloed job opportunities that we were raised to look and aspire to be. But for young people to aspire to work in environmental issues and in sustainability and in being leaders or even being that young person in a company that can lead the ESG profile and completely transform the entire company, because they believe in the environment. And young people are the ones who see most urgency because they are the ones shouldering the burden of climate change on their health, their future, as well as their basic access to education, healthcare services, and so on. So, yeah.
No, that's a great answer. And like you say, you can't be what you can't see. So it really helps to trailblaze in this area. I could talk to you all day, but I have some quick fire questions just to finish, if that's okay, if you're ready. So, first one, what would you describe as your greatest success?
Yeah, that's a great question. I personally think my greatest success, which was very challenging, is to do what I love right now. Transitioning from being a physician and a surgeon, working with patients directly and learning so much from doing that, into being in the policy space with a voice that can influence, that can be listened to, and centering health, and not just the health of communities, but the health of children and young people from where I come from the Middle East and North African region. And being a woman, an Arab woman in spaces like this, is a success that I'm continuously grateful for. Grateful for the people who continue to empower me, to give me the opportunities to speak, to voice my perspectives, but also to do my own research and to translate that research into evidence-based policies that are credible and that are based on the voices of the communities that I had the opportunity to work with, and hopefully reflect their demands into the process.
And what would you describe as your greatest failure?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. I think my greatest failure would be, yeah, I need to reflect on that. It's a very great question.
Also, do you see it as failure? Because failure is quite a strong word. You don't always fail, you learn, don't you, from a situation. So it's not necessarily
Yeah.
a flaw or something that's negative.
Yeah, exactly. I think with every, mistake or challenge, we learn so much. I feel every bump in the road I was able to learn from. I mean, sometimes I always think about, well, I shouldn't have gone into medical school since I'm very passionate about public health, and I should have been, doing another degree that makes more sense to the work that I'm doing right now on climate change and ESG, maybe working in business or litigation or finance. But then I reflect back on my journey, and I think that being a medical doctor was actually what I needed to be doing the work right now, to bring in a new perspective to the work that is being done for ESG, to be seen not just as a finance or a profit model, but as a people's model at heart. And it would only help me realize that just by getting the opportunity to work and help patients and treat them.
The mantra of Woman of the Future is kindness and collaboration. What does that mean to you in both your personal and professional life?
Yeah, I think kindness is so important, and being empathetic, compassionate, and understanding to each other is actually at the core of what I do. Right now, I don't only focus on climate and health, I also focus on mental health and psychological resilience. And I think that would relate back to the question around failure. I think I tend to fail to take care of my own mental health, and that may lead to many times I feel very burned out because it's very difficult to say no, and I want to do everything. And many young people like myself working in this field try to do so much without protecting their own mental health, without being kind to themselves. And being kind to others is so important, but also being kind to ourselves when doing this work and protecting our own mental health and taking time out and taking time to understand our climate distress and emotions is very important, which what kindness means to me, but also kindness to other people and listening to others is so important. Cooperation and collaboration is the beauty of working in this field because we all come from different geographies, disciplines, and sectors, but we all care about one thing, which is the health of the planet, which we are part of, and also the health of our children, grandchildren, and all the future generations to come. And this brings us all together naturally to collaborate for this cause.
It was a really powerful message. Thank you. Is there anything that scares you?
Yeah, a lot scares me actually. I think what scares me the most is the poly crisis that we are living in. That this is a term that we are faced to use right now. It's not just the environmental crisis, but it's also what is happening economically, politically around the world. The injustice that we are seeing, and in some places there is a lot to see when it comes to act of kindness, fighting for climate justice and for health, but also there's a surge of injustices and sufferings and pain that people are experiencing around the world. And this, I think, is what scares me the most.
What is left on your to-do list? I have a feeling it's quite long.
Oh my God. A
How
lot.
long have we got?
It my to-do list today or to-do list?
Generally, should we go generally?
Generally, yeah. Yeah, I think what's left in my to-do list is, in general, I love working on policy, but I also want to go back to working a bit with patients and to combine what I'm doing right now when it comes to research, policy, and advocacy with working with the community, helping patients as well. But also, I would love to work more on education and capacity building and working with young people. It's just so incredible to be a day job, empowering others and giving them opportunities like the opportunity that I had with women and ASG is so important. So this is definitely on my to-do list. I think also, keeping in contact with my family, taking time for myself and doing something healthy like sports, or that is also something in my to-do list that I try to work on and address. Yeah, and I think I have many, many events coming up that I'm much looking forward to because events like this are an opportunity to influence, but also an opportunity to see friends and to start new projects and initiatives together.
I'm really excited to see what you do next, and I have no doubt you'll absolutely fly in your career. Thank you so much. It's been a joy speaking to you. You're an inspiration, and I wish there were more people like you in the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure. Definitely the best thing I had on my to-do list today. So I hope you have a
Thank you.
wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Woman of the Future podcast. If you enjoyed it, please hit the subscribe button. And while you're there, why not give us a rating and review? You know you want to. For more about the Woman of the Future Awards, network, and initiative, please visit www.womenofthefuture.co.uk. See you soon.